Hello, my name is Paul Greatrix, and this is the latest edition of the My Imaginary University podcast, which this time stars Ben Villiamy, Executive Director at HUA. Ben creates an exciting and distinctive Yorkshire-based university, which is busy connecting with everyone and everything, but has no time for mission groups. It enthusiastically partners with organisations and agencies across the country to deliver education and research in novel ways and places, from Grimsby to East London. Good citizenship is central to every part of student life, and working closely with the Students' Union, the aim is to have the healthiest students around. There are also some novel approaches to hotel-style student accommodation and food and beverage provision. Ben, unsurprisingly perhaps, sees himself as registrar rather than vice-chancellor of this new university, and having a culture which fosters constant reflection amongst the student population, is confident that everything will be just fine. It's a great episode. I do hope you enjoy it. Right, well, welcome everyone to the latest exciting episode of the podcast, My Imaginary University. And this time, it's my huge pleasure to introduce Ben Villiamy, who is Executive Director and many other things at the Association of Heads of University Administration, AHUA, or AHUA, depending on your preference, an organisation which I was very proud to be a long-standing member until my departure last year. So welcome, Ben. It's great to have you on.
Hiya. When you talk about your departure, it makes it sound like you're deceased and I'm talking to you from beyond the grave. But there you go. You're not beyond the grave, I can confirm.
It's not quite that bad yet, but very much moving in that direction. But we'll stick to lighter matters at the moment. So I've asked you to think about some things that would create your ideal imaginary university. I've no idea what you're going to come up with. So I'm going to hand it straight over to you and ask, what kind of institution have you dreamed up, Ben?
So, I prefix this by saying I've really enjoyed daydreaming over the weekend about, what's possible when there aren't any kind of foundations that you're building upon, you know, when there's no history that you're trying to adjust and move. There's just this beautiful blank canvas ready to be painted upon. And that's a wonderfully liberating experience. And I think at the core of my imaginary university is this kind of, it's a convening institution. It's an institution that is riddled with really, really creative, mutually beneficial partnerships from top to bottom. it's built into the way it works. It's built into its pedagogy. It's built into its structures and its estate and its kind of mission. And everywhere is this idea of constantly connecting and joining dots at every level. And actually, you know, one really specific thing that's a kind of quirk on the idea of, you know, connecting with others, is actually that it would be very proudly unaligned. It is of no mission group. So despite being hyper-connected, it's kind of built into its statutes that it will not be aligned to a mission group. It believes that being bound to a mission group actually can create some boundaries and some limitations about who you work with or how you work with them or the very topics of discussion, et cetera, et cetera. So hyper open-minded about collaboration and yet not of a mission group.
Right. So give me a bit more about the kind of it's kind of in the UK, I think you're telling me. Yeah. It's sounding like the kind of an element of the kind of scale and ambition of the Open University in terms of that kind of openness. But I'm not certain that's exactly how you're pitching it.
No, it isn't actually. Although I did think about the Open University and the kind of agility it has of being kind of simultaneously of no place and of a place. I think I was thinking more. This might make some people wince as I say it, but you know, the idea of a kind of franchise, right? And I'm not saying that we would sell our model elsewhere. But the local authorities, businesses, cold spots in the UK, could come to us, would want to come to us and talk about how they would work with us to fill a specific gap or to use a resource or an asset that they had on their doorstep that was dormant somehow. And so when I say franchise, I'm not talking about us giving our model to someone else to kind of inhabit in and of themselves, but to work with us through our franchise.
So perhaps it's not so much a franchise as a kind of collaborative partnership in a different locale.
I mean, yes, but it would proudly have multiple names on the
Yeah,
tin, right?
okay. Yeah.
So if this was if this was Grimsby, saying it's spotted this really specific opportunity to work with us through some dormant retail space that it's got on a specific, really local research thorny problem that they've identified. They would be proudly owning a stake in it, as the imaginary university and as something of Grimsby, of its people, of its history, of its heritage, and of the very problems it was trying to address.
Right, okay. So I think it's yeah, I think it is more genuinely a partnership and collaboration than strictly a franchise. So let me assume from what you've just said that the headquarters of the institution is not in Grimsby. Where then is it?
I'm a Yorkshireman and I love Yorkshire, and actually, Yorkshire has some of that, the northernness that I love, but also, a mixture of some fantastic universities and actually some quite interesting cold spots. I've kind of mentioned Grimsby. I was thinking about Rotherham earlier on for something quite specific, but I'll maybe come to that later. But so I think it's probably something as ethereal as a Yorkshire institution that can spread beyond that in all those kind of creative, collaborative ways that I've started to allude to.
Okay, and is it I'm just trying to get a physical sense of it, 'cause I do think that, from what you described, it is really important to get a sense of the physical nature of the organ. So is it a kind of urban-based institution, or is it a kind of semi-rural campus-based institution?
I anticipate that our headquarters, let's call them, our
Yeah.
main base, our primary base, it does actually have both offices and a campus.
Right.
It's probably on the edge of a northern town, perhaps between some Yorkshire, interesting Yorkshire cities. A bit like the old Bretton Hall campus would have been many, many years ago. And that again is the reason it's in that location was about identifying space that existed. Reusing, land or estate that was lying dormant, we were bringing it back to life in some way, creating a whole new economy around a place that had perhaps been slightly forgotten and left behind in amongst Yorkshire's major thriving cities.
And you're jolly handy for the M1 as well, right? So just again thinking then about your opening remarks in relation to this. How does the interconnectedness manifest itself? I mean, I'm imagining from what you said that you have essentially an awful lot of traffic in terms of people coming and going from the campus, from all sorts of different organizations, and different kinds of students coming to study from around the country, around the world. So do you want to say a little bit more about that?
One of the things, the way I'll try and come to that is, so you challenged me to think about, if there were particular institutions that perhaps inspired this imaginary university, and there were a couple of things that three things institutions that came to mind. Open University, who we've already mentioned, that kind of that hyper agile, innovative, doing something fundamentally different and claiming it as its own specialism and unique proposition, that was an attractive idea. totally contrasting that was Edge Hill, actually. Edge Hill, beautiful, almost the opposite of Open University in some ways, and it's got beautiful campus, modern campus, innovative facilities, this kind of modern institution that's punching above its weight, perhaps as one of the kind of plate glass institutions on the edge of the city, unfazed by the big boys in Liverpool, just coming in and kind of dominate, creating its own space and dominating that, very, very comfortable in its own skin. And the third institution that inspired me was the Dyson Institute, partly to do with the business links, and kind of this kind of proud engineering innovation space that it's occupying, but again about spotting a gap, in that case, in quite a private market, I suppose, or what would traditionally be a private market, and saying I'm going to fill it, I'm going to attach together the idea of a university with a modern successful business in its own right, and so that the reason I mention that is because that's I do think there would be a campus and an Edge Hill if you want, and perhaps as well as sophisticated, clever ideas in and around the technology space that mean that our technology strategy and the way that creates place and relationships is as sophisticated as an estate strategy might be, but it's using a kind of international digital domain, rather than physical buildings, and then that kind of really close industrial links that the Dyson Institute has established. That gives you a sense of how we're connecting, sometimes on and through the campus, sometimes through our really sophisticated cutting edge digital strategies, and sometimes through business and industry links.
Right. Okay. That's really clear, I think, Ben. So in terms of the kind of range of disciplines on offer, it sounds pretty broad. You're not kind of ruling stuff out, and you're presumably, 18 through to PhD as well.
Yeah, so I did think a bit about subject mix. You're right that we are trying to create new opportunities for both teaching and research that fills gaps. We don't want to, we're not kind of insisting that there's never any duplication, but we are really cautious about dup. We want to solve long-standing issues with our pedagogy, with our teaching, with our research, that others have tried and not really solved, or that have been laid unanswered for a long time. The one quirk to that, is citizenship, and particularly true in our perhaps with our undergraduate courses. Whatever we are teaching will always have a slant on it that says, what is the role of society in this? How do we build a kind of a moral compass around this subject matter, that allows us to use it for wider social good rather than just for your 2-1 in the course, right? We are teaching students both within the pedagogy and within their kind of lifestyle and wider student experience to think about spotting and filtering misinformation. We're helping them to think about their values, not necessarily the kind of British values and how they adopt them, but their own values and how they manifest themselves and where they will take them, about their connection to the world around them, and so on and so on. And so yeah, citizenship underpins a lot of our work.
That's it. That is really interesting, very, very clear. And that's kind of, yeah, so that's part of everything then, as far as, so in terms of, just again, I'm coming back to the campus thing, because I always end up thinking about physical stuff. So do you have a large residential student population? Is it a mainly commuter population? What's the kind of feel that you get on campus?
Significant commuter population to the extent that, the classic example of this will be residential, but you could apply the same principle to other facilities, that it's kind of pay as you go. So our primary residential offer is designed for you to pay to, attend 2 days a week, and the rest of the time you'll be doing your job 60 miles away in a different city, or with your family somewhere else, right? Or at the Dyson Institute doing your work on the ranch, or so on and so on. But so it's kind of hotel based, and it's that hyper flexibility is really built in, so that at the start of your year you get your timetable ridiculously early, so that you can find out, actually, I only need to be in the campus on a Tuesday, but it's a really long, busy day on that Tuesday, really, really intense learning experience. So I want my accommodation on a Monday night and a Tuesday night. But I don't need it for any other days of the week. And because we've structured our timetable in that way, that means that, the person next to you, who's only in on a Thursday, can book the same room, and there's kind of, storage facilities built in, and you change the bed sheets between Paul coming and going, right? And so on and so on. But that's built into our refectories, that's built into our sports facilities, our sports calendar, like everything is hyper flexible.
Right, that is fascinating. Yeah, and I don't think I've ever come across that model before, but I can see exactly what you're saying. And it just requires good planning, good organisation, and a very good booking system, essentially.
Well, yeah, and look, it is so part of that idea of comes it wasn't that long ago I was looking to do a master's myself. It was kind of 2019, I guess. I was starting to look at what should I do for a master's, and I realized I was really limited in terms of what I could do, because I've got a family, I've got a full-time job, I've got I live in this part of the world, and so on and so on. And actually, I realized that once you whittle it down to the amount of master's courses that were of interest to me and flexible enough for me to structure around everything else, that you could count them on a handful, right? Because so many of these courses are designed to be full-time, deeply immersive experiences. Now, once I found the course that was right for me and structured it around my family and my professional life and so on and so on, it was incredibly enriching to be able to take actual modules from the masters and apply them in my personal life. Actually, professional, fairly obviously, but also personal to some extent. But that was all based on, I knew I was, had to be go and book a hotel in that city, next to that institution on, these 3 days of the month, and then I had to book in some home study time on this day of the month, and just hyper organized, scheduled. It worked for me, it worked for the institution, but that's the absolute exception at the moment.
No, but I can see how that, if the principle was baked into the organization, that you could make that work, if you've got enough decent accommodation and decent storage space. So tell me then, Ben, what does this mean for the student experience then? Because I mean, you immediately mentioned, the issue of, sport, for example, right? I can just imagine putting together the second 11 on a Wednesday afternoon would be an absolute nightmare.
Well, it might no longer be the second 11, but perhaps the Tuesday 11 versus the Wednesday 11, or whatever. I have no idea. I mean, look, I'll take it back to the citizenship point first and foremost, that I think the student experience has a really important place to fill in that regard. And I envisage that my imaginary institution is baking in kind of credit bearing, debating societies and volunteering credits, and really developing kind of community outputs, if you want. So your academic syllabus, it is it pales in comparison in some ways to your kind of student experience syllabus, and picking your modules in volunteering that will complement that academic experience, and be hyper flexible for me to schedule around my timetable, my personal commitments, my professional commitments, and so on and so on. Really, really tricky to deliver. And again, you talked about it being baked in from day one, this idea of flexibility and agility. I think that's about baking it into the design and build of our buildings, of our students' union, and of the applicant. So actually, again, if I take it back to my experience doing a master's, I knew I couldn't attend every the Wednesday night cinema club because I wasn't ever on campus on a Wednesday night. That's fine. That's okay by me. But here is something I could do when I was there on every other Friday or whatever. So you build a tolerance and a flexibility in yourself as well as the institution building it.
You mentioned in passing student union then. That's something that I know that you're passionate about based on your previous experience as well. But what role does the student union play a particularly prominent role within the university?
Yeah, probably. A lot of my interest in student unions is around student representation. And if I'm honest, I'm in my imaginary university. I'm slightly less preoccupied by that. I'm very preoccupied by the role they play in putting on activity and kind of community building that complements pedagogy and that idea of kind of credit bearing, social involvement, community building, citizenship. I'm really interested in their role in mental health. I was thinking of, it's trendy to talk about mental health, so this isn't new and innovative, but I suppose I did start thinking about the role of the Students' Union to deliver activity that builds citizenship and is efficient. So actually, if our whole student experience, our students' union, our pedagogy are coming together and saying, do you know what, we want to have the healthiest in body and mind students of them all, actually, because it's socially good, because that builds, healthy, strong, resilient, whatever adjective you want, people. But also, frankly, because it means we have to spend a bit less money on mental health support and student minds charters and our counselling team and so on and so on. So we perhaps don't need colleges in the same way, and so on and so on. Because actually, everyone's really, really strong, independent, healthy, happy, content individuals. But equally, you could talk about, one of the partnerships that the Students' Union is building in. It is something with the local NHS provision that actually builds up the city's mental health and well-being, because our students are now going and, I don't know, running projects with elderly people's homes, helping them, handle dementia in a different way, because that's interesting and because that's part of that kind of social justice and citizenship piece, and because they're getting credits for it. Isn't that wholesome and efficient?
Yeah, I think what you're demonstrating there is that yeah, the student union matters and has a key place in the in the governance and indeed operations of the institution. And the way you described it actually seems to be very sensible, actually really beneficial as well. But the other dimension you threw in there was about the kind of level of civic involvement. You talked about students taking their citizenship very seriously. And given you've got the student union helping the NHS, what wider role is the university playing in relation to its kind of local communities and economy as well? You talked about again about all these connections and about helping each other and all the rest of it. But is there a kind of wider civic role that the university is playing?
Yeah, which is an unusual civic role, because of course, if we think about a fairly traditional city-based institution, it has one, we hope it would have one very strong, very local civic program. But because my imaginary university is both of a place and of And it has this kind of idea of collaboration really widely built in, its civic strategy can be with dozens of different, towns and cities and businesses and localities all at once, right? What is the university's role in civic? Well, first of all, it's about building that idea of, civic being about bringing people together for common good. It builds it into its institutional purpose and being. It builds it into its pedagogy. It builds it into its students' union and so on and so on. But secondly, it's about the creative way in which it does it. So let me give you a couple of specific examples of what the civic, how the civic strategy might work. And I'm going to do it in the research space, if you'll indulge me in there for a second. So In my imaginary university, the research specialisms are hyper-targeted, very civic, and they are demand-based. So we are about to. Rotherham has one of the highest levels of food insecurity in the country, right? That's a fact. It has one of the highest percentages of adults unable to access food in the whole of the UK. And so we're going to work with Rotherham City Council and Aldi to go and radically reinvent the way that retailing works with local farmers and local communities in order not just to offer, healthier, good quality food retailing, but actually to upskill the understanding of local people. Like this is purpose custom built for Rotherham with my imaginary university and an international business and so on and so on. And you could come up with dozens of these. East London has one of the highest levels of vacant retail space in the whole of London, I believe. We'd go and do a project with UEL, so with another university and an area of London that is about understanding ways of reformatting that vacant retail space to solve homelessness and reduce the 200,000 plus people in London who are homeless, right? Mission-based, local, civic, high impact, highly collaborative, and we're less worried about our name being on the tin in many ways in that regard.
Talk us through, kind of place and venues and catering then, Ben.
Yeah, so in this hyper agile, flexible institution where people are dropping in and out with different kind of motives to and really, that kind of civic collaborative purpose being built in. I did think about the type of hub that a physical students' union building might offer, and this hub is kind of half. Students' Union Brewery, reducing the food mileage because it's producing stuff locally. You can just see the beautiful copper distills being in the building that you're sat communicating around and meeting with your friends and your peers and so on and so on. But it combines all of that with this kind of really trendy, modern, flexible international food court. I don't know if you've ever been to the Time Out Market in Lisbon, which is this kind of really beautiful food court with lots of micro kiosks, each one specializing in a particular kind of niche food from a different continent, perhaps, or from a from made with a different heritage and history, or kind of one specializing in vegan and one specializing in something dripping with meat, a fat, and whatever else. But so you get this venue space with the beautiful copper distills, and the kind of student chemists are the brewmasters, because they're absolutely involved in it, perhaps along with their supervisors or God knows whatever else. And they the Student Gardening Society have picked the local berries and herbs for the gin and so on and so on, and so it becomes this really creative space where, all of the different students from different cultures and backgrounds are sharing and consuming and talking about their food culture, their drink culture, and how that all comes together. And they're actively involved. They have a stake in this very kind of creative exchange space that becomes a very creative, vibrant, kind of fun environment to be in. That there is students doing kind of feed bellies, not bins, recycling food stuff in one corner of the venue, and there's a in another corner of the venue there's a group making fresh dough and kind of talking about kneading the dough, which because at the same time as making fresh bread and teaching students how to do that, they're talking about dough as in money and how to budget efficiently, and so again this absolute hub of interesting kind of collaborative social communal activity, and you drop in and out whenever you want, and there is always going to be something going on that will nourish you literally or metaphorically.
Okay, that's really, really interesting, Ben. So two questions. One is, I'm assuming that you are, leading this organization, given that you've dreamed it up. So what kind of VC are you? And are you just spending your whole time just swanning around and trying to build these relationships with, places like Rotherham and East London?
Well, you're wrong. I wouldn't be the VC. I'd have to be the registrar because,
Right.
registrars are always secretly the most important people in any organization, as we all really know. But anyway, so the VC is very, very brave. I think you have to be to kind of take on the thorny problems that nobody else is willing to tackle. And some of that stuff around not being too worried about your name being on the tin, this is a very brave, unusual VC in some ways. They are hyper focused on long-term solutions rather than quick wins that, mean that, the VC can get their name in the paper straight away, because actually that project they're crafting today probably isn't going to come to fruition till they've moved on and someone has replaced them. But while they are interested in long-term solutions, that those long-term solutions are about the immediate challenges. So strategic responses to responsive issues, if that makes sense. They are a natural convener. That kind of really, they look at committees, they look at problems, they look at opportunities, and say, how do I coalesce the right people to be involved in this discussion? And they don't feel the need to chair it because it's not their ego. It's actually about having, the right voices in the room. It's about having, but they're just bringing people together around the shared focus of, here's a massive challenge, a massive opportunity. My voice doesn't matter. I'm interested in, who the people are that can really, write, present, commission the action plan to that issue.
So I can see then a great double act between yourself as the registrar and this, distinctive kind of vice chancellor. So, are there other aspects of the university that we've not mentioned yet that we need to cover? Because you've painted a very clear picture, a very distinctive kind of institution, which is, both local and national, and operating in a quite distinctive way in terms of meeting very particular student needs, but at scale as well. So, but are there other features of the institution that we need to know about?
A couple of things that might interest you. So I was thinking about, I suppose, pedagogy more deeply. That, and again, how do I build a pedagogy that's unique and special and high impact? And reflection is a really, really important principle of our pedagogy. So we feedback alone is not enough. We want the individual to reflect very naturally day by day. They're taught about a range of formats and structures for both self-reflection, peer reflection, and expert reflection. And so, on everything they do, whether it's the sport with the union, or the part-time job they've got, or the submission they've just made, they're trying to go, okay, I've finished that. How do I reflect on that? How does the person sat next to me reflect on it? And how does my supervisor or the expert reflect on it? So feedback is no longer transactional. It's not something I get. It's something I am part of. If I'm the student, I am giving and receiving feedback on myself and on others. And that really, because that is practiced so deeply, both pedagogically and in my student experience, it becomes, part of my, I suppose, my wider social, students' wider social practice. So they have, that gives them a different stake in their relationship with learning and teaching, right? So actually, as a result, this is hyper efficient, right? Because the student feels that they are part of their learning and teaching, because their own personal reflection is built in, actually it reduces some of the litigious nature. There are less student complaints because they feel they're personally responsible for the quality of learning and teaching, and for which days they booked in the residencies, and which societies they're part of, and so on and so on. So they are less inclined to complain about it. They almost feel like they'd be complaining to themselves. Again, it helps their mental health because it makes them strong, independent, individuals, which again is very efficient and socially good to have this really independent, strong-minded individuals. Less time and energy is spent thinking about free speech because they all understand how to listen to and speak to others. Very, very relaxed, calm about doing it. This is really defining, even though it comes from, the idea of reflection is not new. It's far from new, but we're practicing it so much more deeply.
It does sound like an introvert's paradise, I have to I have to say. But no, I absolutely get what you're saying. No, and I can see all those benefits stemming from building in that reflective requirement as part of everything, and it becoming second nature. So that's the kind of thing that you're supporting and encouraging and building in. You are a very powerful registrar in this organization. I mean, you have the ability and the power to ban things. But is there anything you would ban, or is it a very, free and easy kind of environment?
No, I don't think I would ban anything, but I perhaps would want to remind our community, our students, our staff, that they aren't obliged to listen to anything. So, actually, I spend my time telling them, don't bother complaining about something you heard that you didn't like, but here's how to walk away from it. Here's how to go and create your own speech on a different platform somewhere else. So it's quite an empowering way of saying, don't listen to people preach crap at you. You can walk out the door whenever you want. You've got the power in this. So we don't need to ban stuff. We can just walk away. And we should take great pride in turning our back on the things that we think are nonsense.
Okay, that's very good. Very good. We've still not quite nailed a name for this august institution yet, Ben. So did you come up with a name?
I didn't, and that's there isn't a kind of an ounce of I mean there isn't an ounce of branding in me, but actually, given that I work for an organisation that's titled AHUA, maybe I'd just jumble a group of letters together and see what happens, and have it as some kind of impenetrable set of letters.
Sounds good to me. I'm sure we'll get the marketing team onto that, and they'll come up with something. And finally, and this is, in many ways the most important question for you. Do you have an anthem or a piece of music that will forever be associated with this institution?
Well, I do enjoy music, and I have incredibly eclectic music tastes. I can listen to a bit of anything and everything going, right? I mean, it's not quite going to be an entire, now 24 music album, but I did really struggle to whittle it down to one individual tune. I was thinking about, this because this institution is it is positive. It is, it's got really positive ideals and ideas attached to it. As I say, our people are healthy and strong and happy and independent. So I kind of, went through, a whole host of things from kind of Back to Blur and everything else in between. I mulled briefly over on kind of Shiny Happy People by REM, which felt quite nice. Ridiculously Happy by Owl City, Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, and so on and so on. I think some of that just felt a little bit too gooey, a little bit too nice. So actually, I ended up settling on our anthem being a tune called "Just Fine" by Mary J. Blige.
Right, fantastic. Well, it's not one that I'm familiar with, but I'm sure I will be listening to it very, very shortly. Ben, that's been absolutely fantastic, but a really great institution with an as yet unspecified set of letters for its name, which we will hear of, I am sure, much more in the future. Thank you so much for taking the time to create your imaginary university.
A real pleasure, Paul. Thanks very much, and lots of fun.
Thank you.
Well, I do hope you enjoyed that episode of My Imaginary University. There'll be more along before you know it. In the meantime, you might want to listen to the sister podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I chat to university leaders and registrars and others like that, all about their experiences of higher education. Just Google it. Also, you may want to visit my website, wonderfulhighered.com, where you can find lots of entertaining stuff all about the strange, wonderful and frightening world of higher education. Anyway, until the next time, thank you for listening.